Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show featuring the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. We are your hosts for today, myself, Greta Anderson, and Ursula Rudenberg. Hello, Ursula. Happy Earth Day.
Hello, Greta, and happy Earth Day to you in the listening audience. Thank you for joining us on this 46th annual celebration of Earth, planet Earth, and its inhabitants.
Of course, every day is Earth Day at Local Talk, or at least we do our best to keep you up on local environmental issues. But today we dedicate ourselves to the topic entirely with one story about swapping out lead shot for non-toxic ammunition and saving some beautiful birds, and another story about Ames high schoolers who have been taking on a very specific campaign among area businesses.
Of course, one of our favorite ways to bring the environment to the radio is to share phenologies, which are short stories about the wildlife happenings associated with the different times of the year and the events of the calendar, so we can all get the broader view of the neighbors we share in our space with here on planet Earth.
By the way, Ursula, my husband and I have been sharing our acreage with a fox these days.
Really? Just a week ago, it was a coyote.
Well, the singing coyotes are gone. So enter the fox. She has a very strange sound, kind of like a cross between a frog croaking, a duck quacking, and a cat coughing up a hairball. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah. Yes, I would. Very interesting.
That's the fox sound. Okay. I know there was a song about what does the fox say a while back, because nobody really knows what a fox sounds like, but that's what it is.
Wow, I thought they barked.
That's not entirely right. I have to work on it. But anyway, the fox seems to be much more tame than the coyotes. Curious about us and willing to get rather close to us.
And they're very beautiful.
Yes. And so far, chickens have been safe, but we are guarding the hen house closely.
Speaking of chickens, we do have a phenology today from our wildlife correspondent, Pat Schlarbaum, to start the show off. Pat brings us this update from southern Iowa on another noisemaker, the prairie chickens, who are currently dancing in southern Iowa as we speak.
Phenology is recording nature's happenings when they occur. The date of the first bluebell of spring or the last bald eagle leaving the nest is noted in a journal for future reference. Today's phenology are the prairie chickens of southern Iowa. April is time of spring when prairie chickens are at their finest. Males strut and boom their calls from elevated landscape features. Males spar with each other and create elaborate dances to impress potential mates at a particular high ground called a lek. Prairie chickens are native to Iowa and weigh about 3 pounds. They are very similar in size to the more common yet non-native pheasants. Prairie chicken numbers were drastically diminished the first part of the 20th century. They were lost as a nesting species to Iowa in the 1950s. Beginning in 1988, the Iowa Department of Natural Resources began efforts to bring prairie chickens back. There's an area about 110 miles south of Ames, near Kellerton, Iowa, where prairie chickens are currently dancing. Rolling grasslands of Ringgold County have benefited from bringing prairie chickens from Kansas, and this year from Nebraska. Recently, I ran into a couple of citizens from Hardin County who were in Kellerton to hear and see prairie chickens. Here's Arlene Brinkmeyer from Radcliffe, Iowa.
When you pulled up, it was pretty dark out.
Yes, it was.
And had you driven down there the evening before?
Yes, and we stayed at the hotel in Montmartre.
Where are you from?
Radcliffe, Iowa.
Well, that was about 150 miles.
That's right.
And you got an early start on the day. Mm-hmm. Had you seen prairie chickens ever before?
No.
What did you expect?
Oh, I guess something what I saw, because I had seen it on Facebook or on Google, I guess.
Well, did you ever think you'd see prairie chickens in Iowa?
No, except for the last few years I've been reading about it.
Well, what is it about the prairie chickens that you thought you would enjoy?
They're dancing. Mm-hmm. And that's another bird I can put on my life list, my bird list.
Oh, you're a birder?
Mm-hmm.
Arlene, would it be okay to ask how many years young you are?
I'm 84.
So you can imagine my surprise when you kind of followed me into the parking area there, and I thought, here's a couple of nice ladies that are here for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Is this sort of prairie legacy important to you and your family?
Yes. Well, it is to me. Now, I have a stepson that has a farm near Lamoni. They went last year because they were staying at the farm, and they're interested in the prairie also.
Some of the prairie chickens have turned up by Lamoni. Lamoni is kind of between Kellerton and the Missouri border. Did you notice the northern harriers?
Yes, I did. At first, I thought they were vultures.
Yeah, they're a grassland nesting hawk. Is there anything else you'd like to include on your big day to southern Iowa to see the prairie chickens this time of year?
The migrating birds, especially the warblers. I plan to go see the pelicans. I hope they're on Pine Lake later on this afternoon.
Nice lake by Eldora. And there's pelicans there, huh?
There have been other years, so I'm hoping they're there this year.
Uh-huh. And you mentioned Pine Creek?
One of the grandsons is graduating from Decorah in May. And then I plan just to go on up there and see if I can see the cerulean warblers.
The cerulean warblers of...
I haven't seen those.
Around the Yellow River State Forest. They're really endangered. But in Iowa, we've got a pretty good population still. And we're just learning how to manage for them.
Wonderful.
So they're pretty important. So I hope you get to hear cerulean warblers, get to see pelicans. I hope you have a real fulfilling spring.
We were very surprised at all the help we got finding the place and how accommodating you DNR boys were.
And there were some girls there, too.
Oh, DNR girls?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I didn't see them.
Would you recommend going down to see the prairie chickens?
If they're interested in birding, very definitely.
Arlene Brinkmeyer from Radcliffe, Iowa, and you're 84.
Going on 85, the new 65.
Okay.
That's what I've been told.
Yeah, that's good. Arlene was accompanied to Kellerton with her good friend, Darlene Ady, from Radcliffe, Iowa. What did you expect to see when you went to southern Iowa with your good friend here, Arlene?
Prairie chickens.
You must have got up pretty early.
Was it 4:30?
Well, what did you think of your trip?
Oh, it was exciting. The town, the people were wonderful to us. It was just great.
The people in Mount Air?
Yeah, and, well, even that... prairie chicken place. I mean, shared their scopes and talked, and it was really great.
Did you ever expect to see something like prairie chickens in Iowa ever again?
I am from Nebraska, and we had prairie chickens out there.
So you kind of grew up with prairie chickens? You're sharing your prairie chickens with Iowa.
Oh, good.
That's that kind of how it's working, yeah.
Yeah.
And we're trying to develop some grassland habitat. I'm enjoying your company, but I'd like to share something a little bit more with the radio listeners. Darlene, how old are you?
I'm 91.
You're 91. And you're getting ready to go see pelicans this afternoon?
And the bluebells.
The bluebells are blooming.
Yes. And I hear their beautiful names.
Yes. The Dutchman's breeches are blooming now, and the bloodroot, and the... hepaticas, yeah, it's all starting.
Yeah.
Kind of windy.
Awful windy.
Yeah, but you'll have this in Iowa. Probably the wind didn't blow out in Nebraska, did it?
Nor did the sunshine.
Oh, okay. Would you encourage people to go down and see the prairie chickens?
Do it now. It's unbelievable.
And maybe we'll run into you up there in the Yellow River State Forest listening for cerulean warblers.
Okay. Yeah, might as well.
I like that. Might as well. Probably a good place to leave it. Well, thank you for sharing your prairie chicken day, and I'll hope to catch up to you again some other time.
One day at a time, huh?
Okay. So follow Darlene Ady and Arlene Brinkmeyer's advice and head on down to Kellerton to hear and see prairie chickens. It's a good show and well worth it. This is Pat Schlarbaum with our phonology for today.
And welcome back to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio and Happy Earth Day. We're your hosts, Ursula Rudenberg and Greta Anderson, and we have been joined in the studio by three young people from Ames High School, Blake Preston, Kylie Morgan, and Jay Amin. Welcome to Community Radio and welcome to KHOI.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead, please.
Just thank you so much for having us here. As you mentioned, we're from Ames High School, and we're just really excited to be here.
That's awesome.
We understand that you are planning to get out in our business community to spread the word about a simple change that businesses can make to reduce the toxins in our environment. Is that correct? Which of you would like to describe exactly what you're doing?
I can talk about that a little bit.
Okay. Blake.
So we are going to different communities or different businesses in our community and trying to talk to them about the BPA in our receipts.
BPA in our receipts. Okay,
yeah,
let's break that down.
So bisphenol A is a toxin in many different plastics and receipts and just a ton of different products that we use day to day. And many people aren't aware of what's in a lot of the stuff that we use, just anything that we're – anything you touch has chemicals in it that you might not know have bad effects on your body.
Right. BPA, bisphenol A, that's also a big deal with water bottles, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, what receipts are you talking about?
The thermal paper that many businesses use, just the stereotypical receipt paper, the black and the white.
The thing that comes out of the cash register?
Yes.
Oh, that's thermal paper. Mm-hmm. It's heat that creates the mm-hmm. image. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And one thing that we're focusing on is some businesses already use BPA for your receipt paper, but there's also BPS, which is a compound very similar to BPA, but it allows the manufacturing companies for water bottles, maybe shampoo products or other things that normally have BPA in them to be marketed as BPA-free, but they still have BPS in them, which is very, very similar to BPA and has the same toxic effects to the body. So we've sourced a phenol-free receipt paper, the thermal receipt paper, which is both BPA and BPS-free, which is what we're trying to switch the businesses over to.
Why is the BPA in the paper in the first place?
It's just a compound that's universally been used. It helps I don't know what exactly it does to the plastic, but it helps make it more manageable, and there's just other things that it's cheap to produce. And, I mean, it's used in plastic water bottles. It's so ubiquitous in the plastic world that it's just become common, and it really hasn't been studied deeply, and it's so deeply ingrained in all these different plastic products that, I mean, it's not – people aren't aware of how toxic it is to the body. Only now, I mean, you see more and more things BPA-free, and consumers are like, oh, I want BPA-free, but there's a bigger issue now with – the manufacturer's just putting BPS in now.
Hmm. And what is the problem with all this?
Animal studies have shown that there are possible links between BPA and exposure and later increase of cancer in the body. I think just 15 seconds of touching a receipt paper, it's already in your body. Is that right?
Yeah. And if you think about all the people that are just like even workers, especially like I know that I work at Orange Leaf, and just touching the receipt literally every time that a transaction is made, like I think about it all the time now. I'm like, wow, I'm just touching these like all the time, and you don't really think about it until you really do some research. So,
well, it's a good thing to just go receipt free if at all possible.
right.
Sounds like.
Yeah, but we met with Matthew Goodman and Jeanette Colton, I think is her name. And they actually talked to POS Supply for us, and they got an entire crate of this BPA, the phenol-free receipt paper. And we now have an opportunity to give some samples to local businesses if they're wanting to try.
Okay, so I know Matthew Goodman owns Fighting Burrito. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is Jeanette also a business owner?
She works
with the Progressive Alliance.
Yeah, the Ames, she works with the Ames Progressive Alliance.
Okay. So you're in cahoots with them?
Yes, we are in cahoots.
How has that gone? How did that connection happen?
I mean, it's going great. At the start of this, we started reaching out to all these different community players, not just businesses. First, we started doing research. We met with the Director of Sustainability at Iowa State, Mary Rankin, as well as officials at Wheatsfield to understand more about their processes. They'd already switched over to this phenol-free thermal receipt paper. And Matthew Goodman and Jeanette just happened to be a connection that came up because he had actually came and spoken to our class earlier, the Bluestem Institute at Ames High School, and that's how we knew that connection. Oh, he was with the city council. He was a small business owner. He'd be perfect to talk to. And he was really enthusiastic to help us, and we're so grateful for the Ames Progressive Alliance as well as Matthew Goodman's donation of their time and help so far to our project.
So how did this whole project get started, and what was the seed of your research and exploration of BPA?
Well, originally it started out, our teachers assigned us a community impact project. So we had to go out into our community and actually have an impact on something. And we originally started out with plastic bags and just like kind of plastic in the environment. I don't know. We were thinking maybe like get a tax on bags or some type of something along those lines. But then we realized that if we actually wanted to have like an impact during the time that we have, because I mean obviously we're going to be graduating soon, we thought that we would focus more on the BPA and the receipts because that's something kind of minor but also in the scheme of things kind of like large just because of the chemicals that are getting into your body and people don't know. So
Has this been known for a while about BPA and the receipts, or is this something relatively new?
I feel like it's been known, and that's why they have put the label of BPA-free on most everything. But I feel like people don't realize that there's other chemicals out there that are like 90% the same as BPA, that they're claiming to that it's BPA-free when in reality there's still 90% of the same toxic chemicals.
So far, what have you been learning, like, beyond the basic chemicals and, you know, the research that you have been doing? What have you learned kind of from the experience of getting out into the community and doing this?
I think the main thing started sort of in the mindset that this class, the Bluestem Institute, gives us. Ever since the beginning of the class, we've been taught to look at things objectively and ask questions about our world, our food. How should we live? How should we treat the environment? I mean, we're the only ones we're going to be living in here for the rest of our lives. And it actually started when we watched this documentary called Bag It. It was an exploration into plastics, chemicals in plastics, how we can recycle them, and what its true effects are in the environment. And that combined with this mindset that we've developed in this class, it's every time we go out and meet with someone new, it's taught us to see both the grand scheme of things and all the small little details, for example, the BPA in the receipt paper, to seeing what potential drawbacks there might be, whether it's cost or other issues, since it's relatively new compared to the longstanding receipt paper that has the BPA in it.
That relates to our next story, which is about the swapping out of lead shot in guns and, you know, in hunting ammunition for a less toxic alternative. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
You were speaking earlier about this alternative that's been created. That kind of went by me quickly. I didn't understand. Who is producing an alternative type of receipt?
I don't remember the exact name of the company, but I know Wheatsfield sourced it originally. It's a vitamin C-based receipt paper. I don't have the name of the distributor on me that created it. But funny story, actually, is that when it was originally created, as I mentioned, it was a vitamin C-based compound. So it had this yellow, orangish, orange peel look that wasn't very appealing. I mean, it's hard to switch over when it looks so different. The manufacturer of this receipt paper recently made some overhauls to the sign, still being BPA and BPS free and still based on the vitamin C compound, but now it looks very, very, very similar to a normal receipt paper.
Mm-hmm. So it has a thermal it must have a thermal reaction like BPA does.
Similar, yeah, because you can just put it straight into the same machine that you had before. So it's not like you have to buy a whole new system to just print out a receipt. It fits right in there. So
when you're handling that receipt, are you absorbing vitamin C?
maybe it's a positive.
But it kind
of begs the question. I actually don't know that, but I would assume. I mean, it's there.
Good way to maintain our public health.
Right.
So can you give us a little bit of overview of what the status is in say, just Ames alone in terms of how many receipts are still carrying BPA, or Are there places where it's no longer being, other than Wheatsfield?
I mean, I think most of the businesses in Ames still use the BPA like receipts because most people don't know about it. They're not aware. When we talked to Matthew Goodman, he had no idea this was even a problem.
So do you have a strategy for changing the receipts in Ames?
Well, in speaking with the different business owners and community players, whether it's from the Ames Progressive Alliance or, for example, we met with Andrea Worldly Goods.
Yep.
And she was a member of some downtown coalition where right now we're putting together our campaign, which is going to detail like the scientific issues with this, the cost issues, the health issues. And we're going to put together this campaign, a Facebook page, possibly a website, and just a short overview of this to almost an advertisement to businesses, why they should consider this and why they should change it. And then our plan is to hit that up, which is all the downtown businesses and also small one-on-one meetings like we had with Matthew Goodman. And he was very enthusiastic about it. He was like, I didn't know about this. Let's try to get this done as soon as possible. And we hope that other businesses and Ames will carry the same energy in taking this step forward, especially since it's such a relatively easy thing to do and it's so helpful for the environment and our bodies.
And it sounds like you're able to provide an alternative source when you ask
for
people
sure.
to change.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. At least at the beginning. They might have to eventually buy their own paper.
They will. I know that Matthew was talking to POS Supply and there was a possibility of discounts and stuff like that for local businesses, but that's not for sure. So, but that is one.
Who is POS Supply?
POS Supply?
Yeah.
They're just
point of sale supply, just a big distributor,
yeah.
like almost like a, I don't know how to describe it, maybe a Sam's Club for big businesses.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And they have this BPA
yeah.
free
yeah.
paper.
And BPS free uh-huh. receipt
BPS.
Paper.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And so you have you already set up appointments with different business owners, or that's the next step?
That's kind of the next step, but mm-hmm. we are hoping to go to, he was talking about the Main Street
Cultural
the,
District.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, they have meetings
early
monthly
May.
Or whatever
oh, good.
That is.
Okay.
So we were planning on getting a presentation together and going
yeah,
down there.
I mean, school's running out.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
You got to get this done.
We might still be working through the summer coming back. I think our main goal right now is awareness, just uh-huh. making people aware.
Putting together our campaign.
And then...
So you're trying to reach the public, not just businesses, but
definitely.
Public
yeah.
as well.
Yes. But the first priority of our campaign is for the businesses, and then our goal from there is going to be to hit as many businesses as possible. It's going to be a little bit harder for big franchises that have a corporate level,
mm-hmm.
But I mean, starting small businesses on downtown, Welch Avenue, and then just hitting one business up at a time and seeing where it goes from there.
Mm-hmm. Can you recommend a place for... somebody listening to this where they could go to find out more about BPA online?
There's lots of research online which specifically helped us. And we're finishing up our campaign here, which Ames Progressive Alliance has agreed to put or at least link to on their website. So it should be available there in the coming week.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it sounds like it might be helpful for anybody who's listening to ask the store manager, is your receipt BPA
Absolutely.
Free.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So it's great that you guys are taking this on. And
thank
possible.
You so much for coming.
And,
in.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much. And one last thing I wanted to mention is that we'd love for anyone listening if they could join the Ames Progressive Alliance and other environmentally concerned organizations today at the Central ISU campus from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Oh, what's going on?
There's going to be tons of tables there with people with information about different things. And Ames Progressive Alliance will be there, though, with loads of
sharing your
great information.
And plenty of other people
yes.
in the community who are environmentally
yes.
forward. Which is exactly what we need.
Okay. Well, okay. We've heard from the youth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, receipts will never be the same again.
Right?
Not to be taken
that's
for granted.
That's actually a good slogan. Receipts will never be the same again.
Ooh, I like it.
Hang out with radio people.
Yeah, right.
Well, please come back and tell us what kind of results you get.
Definitely.
That would be great. Thank,
thank you.
Thanks
you. Again.
Thank you for having us.
Okay. We've just about reached the halfway point, Ursula, in our program.
Okay.
And that means we have time for some music.
We have some music. And to introduce the music, I just, you know, in my mind yesterday, all day long, I had a particular scene in my head from my own life. It's when I, in around the early 1980s, I moved to New York City and, you know, was kind of on the low end of the totem pole in terms of apartments, as one is when one moves to the city. I was living in an absolutely miserable, roach-infested apartment on the Lower East Side. And I remember waking up in the morning. It's a very, very dreary environment, but it was like one of the most beautiful moments, memories of my early times in New York City. And why was that? It's because when I woke up, this is what I heard playing in the apartment next door as coming through the window. Welcome back to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. That was When Doves Cry by Prince, who, as practically everybody knows by now, died yesterday, April 21st, in his home in Minneapolis. And the causes of death aren't really known yet, and an autopsy will be performed today to find out the cause of death. And I don't know about you, but I have not recovered yet.
Well, we are celebrating Earth Day on Local Talk this morning. And you may think it an odd time of year to be talking about hunting, which generally takes place in the fall and winter, but it is a good time to be planting seeds. And we think this next interview with lifelong hunter Mike Metz of Story County will do just that.
Mike is a member of the Pheasants Forever and Ducks Unlimited, two hunting organizations, also a member of the Audubon Society, Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, and he is a volunteer for Story County Conservation. He teaches hunter education for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources.
Although he wants to make the point that he speaks as a citizen, not in his role as a DNR person. Almost 30 years ago, the federal government passed a law mandating the use of non-toxic, i.e. non-lead, shot for migratory waterfowl. At about the same time, Mike made the choice to forego the use of lead, no matter what he was hunting. We'll hear him describe the change in his practices, and then we'll talk to Marlene Ehrsman, director of the Iowa Wildlife Center, about her experiences with eagles and other birds that have consumed lead.
My family was a hunting family, so I started following out my relatives pretty early age, 8, 9 years old. I started in Wisconsin and am a transplant here in Iowa, so it was that was our culture then.
What did you like about hunting?
Just getting outdoors, seeing the animals, the habitat, experiencing that with the family, and sharing those memories. And that right now, that's, you know, you think back, family memories, those are some of the strongest, are those outdoor times.
And then did you usually prepare and eat the game that you shot?
Well, it wasn't until I was in junior high, but yes, we consumed everything we hunted. We didn't need to. None of us were starving, but it was part of that family outdoor activity that we were involved in.
All right. And when was it that you first heard about the issues surrounding lead shot?
Oh, it was back actually probably the late 60s, early 70s, senior high, just starting in college. Of course, that piggybacked on some of the issues that surrounded DDT, those kinds of things, you know, the things we were putting out in the environment. Lead was a concern. We actually, Dad and I, would shoot at the trap range, and we'd reload our own. And one thing I distinctly remember learning as we learned to load was you always washed your hands after you were done because of the lead that you could have in your hands. You'd never wanted to eat or drink after you were loading your shotgun shells.
So at some point you made the connection between that care you had to take for yourself and the care that you wanted to take for the environment.
Yes. I guess I've always had a concern for the environment because I grew up in it. And though maybe I didn't have the formal training, it just seemed like observation, that kind of thing, just helped appreciate what was going on out there. And, you know, there was that ethics thing started to you know, blossom as I grew older and learned more. And I would say it was college years when the more we learned about it, and then when the act, the Toxic Shot Act for waterfowl hunting, migratory waterfowl, when that was talked about and passed, which I believe it was in the early 90s when the federal government finally, it was a federal law. But it was prior to that when a lot of the studies were coming out. In fact, some of the manufacturers of cartridges, shotgun shells, it was the late 60s, I believe, they started to offer a non-toxic round at that time. But nobody really had a lot of experience with that. And didn't know it was other than the folks that were doing the research weren't aware of the effects. We were duck hunters as well as upland game. And for us, upland game was rough grouse up in Wisconsin. We didn't have the pheasants like we do here in Iowa. But when I hunted areas that you knew ducks were going to be in, that would have the ephemeral ponds, you see, the sheet water in the springtime during migration, pretty much just started hunting with non-toxic, no matter what we were hunting on, as far as property.
What is the non-toxic rounds? What are they made of?
There's a variety of materials. Steel shot, bismuth, tungsten iron. Those are a couple of the different things that are used for shotgun shells. I know initially there were problems because the density is a big issue. Lead is more dense per unit than the same size of pellet that would be used for non-toxic steel, for example. But you learn with experience shooting, with the load you use, the size of the BB, and also the velocity, the energy as well. All those can be factored in when you're putting a round together. A lot of folks in the very beginning thought that a steel round would shoot like a lead round. Well, because of the density, that's not necessarily true. So you'd have to learn that your ranges were different. You don't want to cripple an animal. You want to try to make a clean kill because that's the whole point. If you're going to harvest, do it humanely so that you can harvest and use the animal.
Wow, so you really have to recalibrate your skills as a hunter.
Right, and it's like anything, it's practice. And so you practice with those rounds as well. It's just like anything. You change a load, and it's going to shoot differently. The other area that I changed my ammunition was when I first moved here. I hunted with shotgun for white-tailed deer, and decided I enjoyed the muzzle loading season for a number of reasons. In the first year or so, first 2 years, I hunted with a lead mini ball, they were called. But there are non-toxic alternatives, and by the third year hunting, and I've been hunting white-tailed deer now in Iowa for going on 30 years, because I've been here for about 36, 37 years. I've been hunting with non-toxic, and I've had just as good a luck. And I haven't taken a deer every year, but essentially every year that I have taken a deer, it's been one shot 90% of the time. And with a muzzle loader, you've only got that one shot. You rarely have that second chance.
Wow. So is the non-toxic shot more expensive than lead?
Originally it was, and, you know, I buy such a small amount, it's hard for me to say for sure, but there's some expense added to it. But it's like anything. It goes up, but as more and more of it's used, the price should have a tendency to come down. One thing I did find, it was harder to find, but partly because it wasn't always put out front. It wasn't always right there where you'd walk into the store and see it. Well, some of our local folks around here, they're pretty good about that. And I think retailers are getting, especially with waterfowl, it's out there because you have to have non-toxic. But some of the other hunting methods, you kind of have to check the shelves for it, but it's there.
And as a hunting instructor, you come into contact with a whole bunch of hunters and...
Well, non-hunters. And, you know, I'm talking as a private citizen here, but as a hunting instructor, that's through the Iowa DNR. And we do make a point of talking about the hygiene, you know, when you're using rounds. Not to mention, I mean, safety is the number one thing that we stress there. But we at least let the kids know, you know, it's not just kids, it's young adults, and some individuals who maybe want to hunt out of state have to have an Iowa permit. But we talk about non-toxic, especially with the game laws. There are waterfowl production areas in the state now that even if you're hunting pheasants, you have to use non-toxic. I think we'll get to a point where we'll have to go non-toxic. There's really no reason not to. It's available. Like I say, you train yourself. It's like knowing your limitations. You know your limitations of your firearm, your ability, and your ammunition. And if you know those limitations, you know what you can and can't do, you'd have success one way or the other, and it's going to protect the critters out there that... you know, may consume. I mean, it only takes one pellet, and I can't remember what size for sure, if it's a number 4 or 6 for a mallard to ingest. It's the same with birds of prey or scavengers. I think the more we talk about it and at least bring it up during our class, and we usually do that. We have a field day with the classes that I teach, and that's usually when we bring those points up. And we also have the DNR. One of the conservation officers comes in, and they stress the non-toxic shot with waterfowl and migratory waterfowl hunting in particular. So I think people are tuned into that. They know that they're not going to be able to go out and pursue that game without that because it's against the law right now. Now there are, like I say, deer hunting, that's a matter of your ethical view. And in my case, my feeling is that if that's one thing I can eliminate as far as introducing something like that into the environment, I'm going to use the alternative if it's there. I've made that choice.
Any last comments, Mike Metz?
I don't think so, other than I hope folks really consider the alternatives and keep Elder Leopold in mind as far as his view on ethics was doing the right thing when nobody else is there to watch you, even though when it's lawful. I think that's something really good to live by. And get out and enjoy the natural world, whether it's with a firearm, a camera, or the kids.
Okay. Thanks so much. And
you're
happy
welcome.
Earth Day to you.
Happy Earth Day to you.
And that was Mike Metz, Story County resident and lifelong hunter. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And Mike spoke to me about that quote. He called me up after we had interviewed, and he wanted to make sure he got the Aldo Leopold quote correct. And I think the second part of the quote is, do the right thing even when doing the wrong thing is lawful. So.
And with us in the studio is Marlene Erisman, director of the Iowa Wildlife Center. Thank you for coming in, Marlene, and happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day to you. Thank you for having me.
So I understand that as part of your job as a wildlife rehabilitator, you come into contact with animals that have ingested lead shot from hunting. Can you describe what that's like for you?
Usually it's typified, and I've been doing this for over 30 years, so we have gotten animals in that indicate that they have symptoms of lead toxicity, and that can range from green mutes, their poop, if you will, is bright green, and that often indicates some problem, and it's often lead. But they often, if they are progressed beyond a minor toxicity problem, then they can have convulsions. They can be depressed. Their eyes are just flashing. They're blinking rapidly. There are a lot of symptoms that it's a nasty, nasty death lead toxicity leads to. So.
And what kind of animals are we talking about usually that you encounter?
Most of the ones that appear to have lead toxicity or have been later proven to have died of lead toxicity have been raptors, including hawks and eagles.
And so you've encountered them, and how do you rehabilitate them?
It's a difficult process, and I myself have not done that. There's a chelation therapy that you could use. They've been using a chelation therapy on waterfowl that have ingested lead from the bottom of wetlands. Waterfowl historically were the first ones to be known to have lead toxicity, and because they would dabble in the silt in the bottom of the wetlands or the ponds and pick up all of the leftover shot that had missed its target as they were picking up grit and food, and they would ingest that. And that was the first indication that there were major problems out there, and that's when the federal government, after several years of discussing it, banned the use of lead shot over wetlands, to hunt waterfowl. So they used chelation therapy on a lot of these animals, like waterfowl. Trumpeter swans still get lead poisoning, and because they're very long-necked birds and will feed on bottoms of wetlands and such. So using lead toxicity or using chelation to absorb the lead out of the system is one of the ways that rehabilitators can treat lead toxicity in these animals. It's very expensive, however, on a per animal basis. None of these animals have insurance. You know, they don't make money. They don't have a job other than to add to the diversity of on planet Earth, and their environmental jobs are non-paying. I guess they're volunteers. So, for rehabilitators around the country to use the chelation therapy can be quite cost prohibitive.
And just by way of explanation. Chelation therapy is a process by which a substance is put into the vein intravenously into the blood of the animal or person, and the metals and toxins bond to that substance and remove it from the blood.
Correct.
So it's a process that cleans the blood.
Correct, exactly. Mm-hmm. Because as these small lead fragments are absorbed into the – you can get shot, and I know a lot of people have lead, old lead pencil heads in their skin or bullet fragments or whatever, and you can, if, as long as it's in the muscle mass, it does not lead to the toxicity. You seem to be able to live with it for a long time. But once it's the digestive juices start breaking the lead down when it's in the stomach, then that's what diffuses it throughout the bloodstream then.
Gets absorbed into the blood.
And that's what causes the major toxicity.
So the chelation therapy is to remove the metal from the blood
correct.
Again.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, of course, the raptors are victim to this, not in a different way than the waterfowl, because they are feeding on maybe some animals that have been shot but not killed immediately, and the animal escaped, ran off, maybe a deer, and then the scavenger birds come in and start picking at the flesh. Is that correct?
That's correct. Right.
Well, also, as I understand it, a lot of times hunters will leave the
gut piles.
The gut piles.
Right, correct. And, right. And so that's a big problem, too. And so
and the raptors then feed on the gut piles.
A lot of eagles in particular are scavengers, and so they will key in on the gut piles and anything that's – or dead deer that have run off and died in the wild. So, yeah. And if an animal comes into us and it's not – it doesn't have a lot of the larger symptoms of lead toxicity. There's still a way to flush it out of the stomach, and it's called gavaging. And so you just actually flush the lead pellets out of the stomach and hope that you got it out of the system before the digestive juices had a chance to break it down and have it absorbed into the bloodstream. So there are steps to go to try and get the animal back on its feet. But once it reaches this critical point, it's hard to do. Yeah.
And so if it's at that stage, you always send them off to somebody else, or do you sometimes have to do a mercy euthanasia?
Yeah, if it's really bad, we'll go ahead, and if the symptoms are really bad, if there's a lot of head tilt over the back of the over its back, then usually it's a no-win case, and so we'll go ahead and humanely euthanize it. But there is someone else here in Iowa who's done a lot of studying, and kudos goes out to Kay Newman of SOAR. And she's added a great deal to Iowa's understanding of lead toxicity, and particularly bald eagles, because her raptor rehabilitation program has focused on that over the years. So kudos goes out to her. She and her husband have a farm and Raptor Rehabilitation Center over near Dedham, Iowa in Carroll County. So she's done this for many, many years. So
this is something you've been aware of for quite a while, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I've worked at the national level with the Wildlife Rehabilitation Community and the Raptor Center of Minnesota, the Wildlife Center of Virginia, larger rehabilitation centers across the country have known about this for a long time. It's been discussed for a long time. The Iowa DNR has been aware of it. They have a publication from the Wildlife Diversity Program called Lead in Wildlife. You can pick that up online, I believe. You can go to the USGS website and pick up a really good article on lead poisoning in wild birds. Minnesota DNR has done a study on the variability associated with bullet fragmentation and deposition in these animals. So a lot of the state agencies and a lot of the wildlife rehabilitation nonprofit centers know that this is a big problem and would just like to see that the right thing is done.
Are you optimistic that eventually this will change?
It's Earth Day. I'm going to be optimistic today.
Okay, well, speaking of Earth Day and optimism, let's end on a positive note.
Yeah,
here.
I understand that you have a big event tomorrow in the streets of Ames.
Oh, that's right. Starting at 1:00 at the library, we'll have exhibits. It's the All Species One Earth event. It's our second annual event. So after the exhibits at the library, we move over to the Bandshell at 2:30, and at 3:00 then starts our All Species Parade, and Dr. Jim Pease and Lana Noctegal will be doing live commentating from the stage of the Bandshell as all the species in their various biomes walk through in all their splendor. So it should be a lot of fun. And to end the parade then, Kay Newman of SOAR will bring one of her resident education eagles and give a live bald eagle program to end the whole
That's
event.
That's wonderful. So. And that's tomorrow.
That's tomorrow. From 1 to 5 is the whole event. Yep.
And the eagle will be at the Bandshell?
Yes. Probably at 4:00 is when the program will start. Uh-huh. Ish. 4:00-ish, you know.
Mm-hmm. So are you going to be in the parade?
Oh, sure.
You'll
recognize me as Strix, the spirit owl.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice.
And you can actually dress up as a biome?
Well, we are going to put all the different species in their proper biomes. And so if there's someone comes as a polar bear, they'll be in the desert biome, which is tundra, is a cold desert, basically. So we'll have ocean, we'll have salt water, fresh water, grassland, forest, and desert biome. So we'll have five biomes represented by all the species who show up, whether they come as an insect or plant or an animal. So it'll be fun.
Are the animals, do they, as the owl, do you make sounds? I mean, do you?
We can. Well, I sure do.
People make their sounds?
We encourage that, absolutely. So if people come as a raven, they'll caw as a raven, and I as a barred owl will certainly hoot my way. Barred owls are really hooting up a storm right now.
They are. I just got back from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And they are doing that in the middle of downtown Pittsburgh.
Yep, yep.
So how does your owl sound?
Wow. Oh, that's good.
That is good.
That's way better than my fox.
See, if you dressed as a fox, you could yip your way down the street. It would be
perfect.
Oh, my
God. That is awesome.
Well, there are others that are much better than me, but it's fun.
Now, this is an all-species parade, so can you go as a human?
You absolutely can. That's right. If you want to represent a human, fine. But if you want to just celebrate other species, then come as other species, and it can be domestic or it can be wild. We just want to celebrate the diversity of life on planet Earth.
That's great. Marlene Erisman, director of the Iowa Wildlife Center, and their offices are here on Main Street in Ames. Mm. Well, I think we're going to go out with another song by Prince. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Greta Anderson and Ursula Rudenberg. We started out the show with a phenology about prairie chickens by wildlife correspondent Pat Schlarbaum. We then heard from high school students Blake Preston, Kylie Morgan, and Jay Amin.
Finally, we discussed the use of non-toxic, non-lead shot while hunting with Mike Meats, Story County resident and lifelong hunter, and Marlene Erisman, director of the Iowa Wildlife Center.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoyfm.org. That's khoyfm.org. There you will also find information about our guests along with relevant links to today's stories. Thanks to Ron Carson for making that possible.
Local Talk was engineered by Jonah DeGeest. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Chelly. And other music you heard was When Doves Cry and 1999 by Prince.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878, or contact us through our website, khoyfm.org.
And thanks again to Ron Carson and everybody else last night who organized our third Thursday live event featuring Dr. Murdoch. Thank you, Dr. Murdoch, for sharing your talent with us. If you enjoyed today's Local Talk show, tell your friends. Remember that your participation as listener and your generous contributions, remember that during our fund drive coming up, are what makes KHOI possible. It's the time of year when we ask you for funds, so we will continue our unique programming and ask for your donations at the state time. Stay tuned in the coming weeks for a lot of special programming during our membership drive, and thank you for listening, and we will see you again on the radio.